If you turn with me to Judges chapter 9. Judges chapter 9. I looked at this passage 5 or so years ago, and it's remained in my memory and my thoughts over the years. It's one of those ones that keeps coming to my mind. It's especially the parable that is told by Jotham about the trees wanting a king. And it caught my imagination, and it held me over the years. And yesterday, its theme was brought back to my attention again at the induction. And in a way, it's the the sermon is still forming in my mind, frighteningly for you and worryingly for me. We have here in chapter 9. Two stories in a way. We have a history story, the story of Abimelech, and his story is an account of the way the world works, how the world thinks, how the world acts. And then there's a parable story that reveals to us how God thinks and how God acts and how we should be as Christians. And so this evening I want to look at these two accounts and to compare them. First of all, the way the world thinks. Now, this is the time of the judges. So the children of Israel have gone into the promised land, but in the promised land, things haven't gone well. There is a lot of fighting and difficulty. Various judges arise by God's grace to help and to aid the people. One of them is Gideon. Gideon, the man with the fleece, the Gideon with the, I'm going to be in trouble now, 300 men, and the pots and the fire and the driving out the Midianites. Now Gideon, he was a good man in many ways and a man that God used. But at the end of chapter 8, we find his great weakness, his great problem. He had 70 sons because he had many wives. Many wives. Now this is going to cause great problems. Especially, he had a particular wife. Well, she wasn't even his wife. She was a concubine, a girlfriend, we would call it today. And she had a son. Now in his lifetime, Gideon refused to take power. He refused to become king. And the people recognized that, and they didn't argue. He was the man. No one was going to stand and disagree with Gideon. But as soon as he died, the situation changes. And with his leaving the scene, you find immediately in chapter 8, towards the end, verse 34, that as soon as he died, the children of Israel didn't remember their God. They didn't remember what God had done for them. And as soon as he was gone, they started playing the harlot with the local gods, the Baals. It's interesting when a generation goes, another generation just runs riot. And we're seeing that in our day, aren't we? A generation is going, and the present generation has no limits, no control. Now, into that situation comes Abimelech. And he has a chip on his shoulder and a desire for power. And he thinks the way the world thinks. And he has a plan to get control and to get power and to get authority. And he uses every wile that he has and everything that's afforded him. He doesn't go to Gideon's family because he knows that he will get short shift with Gideon's family. They're not going to agree to anything that involves a man taking power and becoming king in Israel. Gideon, they still remember, refused it, and they're going to refuse it. So he doesn't go to that side of the family. We find that he goes to his mother's side of the family, where he'll get a hearing. And so he goes to his mother's side of the family with this great plan to gain power. And he's very sly. He goes to his brothers, his mother's brothers, his uncles, and he speaks to them. And he says, well, family, family, now, we're in a situation. Gideon's gone, and we're going to have 70 rulers, his 70 sons. It would be better if we just had one. Just had one of his sons. You know Gideon is a great king, don't you? Chosen by God. Now, his offspring will be, you know what it's like. They're going to be princes, and one will become king. Now, we're going to have loads and loads of princes. It's going to be chaos. Let's just choose one. Now, I know a man who's fit for the job. And the strange thing is, he's related to you. Now, if you put his name forward, he would, well, I would, be very willing to take that place. And I would be willing to rule. And you know, if I'm ruling, you're my family. That's his plan. Very clever, isn't it? Watch the politicians over the next year. Very clever. And they all said, great idea, great idea. Yes, we agree with this, and we think that you'd make a very suitable king. And here's some money from the temple. Now go and fulfill your end. And so he did. He went and he chose for himself some worthless men. He hired reckless men. And he went to his father's house. And he slaughtered his brothers. An appalling thing. Judges doesn't hide the truth. It's genocide. We'd call it today, wouldn't we? The destruction of a family. And he killed all his brothers on one stone. What was that like? For power. The power that drove him. He would kill 70 brothers just on one stone. Must have been a horrible day. But he wanted power. He wanted power. We're watching a man now clinging on to power in Africa and destroying a nation. Just for power. Just for pride. Pride is a powerful thing. It's a destructive thing. It'll destroy a nation. It'll destroy a family. It'll kill. We see it very clearly here. God does not hide the heart of man from us. And he went and he killed every brother but one. And the people, they turned a blind eye to it. These are God's people. These are God's people, the children of Israel. And they turned a blind eye. And they took him to a tree. And they were going there to crown him king. They will crown him king. And they said, it's better that 70 die than we have chaos. Is that not our world? Isn't that our world? Is that not the way that our world is thinking? Is that not the thoughts of those who are ruling over us? It's not rule by grace and love. It's ruled by might and power. And haven't we seen over the years and over the generations powerful men exert their influence even at the cost of many lives? And very often for personal glory and for prestige and for honour. The evil in men's hearts, who would believe it? And you say, it's not in mine. Pride's there though, isn't it? Pride's there. I'm sure you may well have gone to this young man when he was growing up and said, when you're older, you're going to kill all your 70 brothers. And he would have said, no. Who would believe they were capable of that? I'm sure there are many people in this world who now cannot believe what they've done in the past, the lives they've taken, the atrocities that have been committed. But the world says, that's fine. That's fine. It's better that way. It's better that a few suffer than many, so that many may do well. or that I may do well. You say, it's not me, isn't it? Isn't it? We do well in this country, at the cost to many nations, don't we? Many nations are living in abject poverty so that we can live in prosperity. Do we not have in our hearts a touch of Abimelech in that? This is the world's way. We're sucked in by it. The evil that men do is hard to believe. And you know it. And you see it. Now, Abimelech's brother stands before the children of God. And he stands on a hill. And he cries out, is this God's way? Is this God's way? And then he tells a story. He starts off by saying, listen to me, you men of Shechem, that God may listen to you. For God is not listening to them at the moment. And obviously God is angry with them for what they're commending and what they've colluded in. And he says, now listen to me, that God may listen to you. And then he tells the story. He tells the story about a forest. And I like it. I like this parable. It catches my imagination. Here's a forest. And this forest is full of trees. And the forest is men, and it's like men. And they are a forest that want a king. They want a king. They want someone to rule over them. They want someone to tell them what to do, but not God. This is man. This is these men. These men who are acknowledging Abimelech and saying it's all fine because they just want a man to rule over them. And we live in that kind of day even now. Even now. Even now we say, well, if we put him in power, then he'll put everything right. We live amongst people who still think that. If I put this man in a place of power, then he'll do everything right. And then we're surprised when they can't and when they don't. And he's telling the story about the king, these trees. And they decided that they would have a king over them. They went forth to anoint a king. They wanted a king to rule over them. And they were searching for a king to rule over them. Now, they started off by going to an olive tree. The olive tree is a lovely tree. It gives its oil and its fruit. And it's an aid and a help in many, many parts of life. And they go to the tree. And they say to a tree, I see you have life. And you say, what's that to do with me as a Christian? What's that to do with me as a Christian? Well, we live in a world that has no fruit, don't we? We live in a world that doesn't have anything really going for it. There is very little love and affection. There's little joy. There's little peace. We live in a world that desires those things. Love, joy, and peace, and affection. When we become Christians, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, and brotherly affection. And the world sees what we have. And they take notice. Do you realize they take notice of you? If you're a Christian living a godly life, you may think, no one notices me. But they notice. They notice. They watch you. We live amongst people who watch us. Because they have nothing. Are you worth watching? You know, my boy plays football. and I stand at the sideline and, well, encourage and whatever you do as a father. And the football team, they bring round a thing for the tickets, you know. I can't remember, lottery. Well, it's not a lottery, is it? You know, the little tickets in the jar, yeah? And they come round, and every week they come round. And every week I put money in the jar, and I say, no, thank you. But I support what you're doing, and the jar goes. And a lady came to me the other week, and she said, will you take some of these tickets? I said, no, but the money. And she went, oh, you're the one. You're the one. Okay, so I was the one. And I thought, oh, well. And then we stood at the sideline, and one of the matches got extremely exciting. And I said something, and the woman was stood beside me. She immediately turned and said, did you swear? Did you swear? They watch. They watch. And she thought about what I had said, and I can't remember what I had said, and she realized that I hadn't. It's my accent, I suspect. But they watch. People watch, don't they? Your neighbours watch you. They watch what you do. They listen to what you say. Your workmates, they watch you. They watch what you do. They listen to what you say. They see the life in you, and they see the joy, and they see the peace, and they watch you. The world is watching. And the world wants what we have. Without the God we have. So here we are in the forest, and the trees, they want what the olive tree has. So they come to the olive tree, they come to this fruitful tree, and they say, will you give us your time? Will you give us what you have? And the olive tree says, should I cease giving my oil, with which they honor God and men, and go and sway over trees? Here's the danger, isn't it? Here's the danger. That the world wants what we have. And so then it comes to us. And it says to us, will you come and do this? Will you bring that fruit of the Spirit? And come. Will you come? Will you bring that oil, that balm that brings peace? Will you come and bring it to our situation? And the olive tree says, no. Not interesting. It says no. So they go on. And they go to the next tree, and they come to the fig tree. And they say to the fig tree, will you reign over us? And the fig tree says to them, should I cease my sweetness and my good fruit and go and sway over the trees? So they come to a tree that gives beautiful fruit. Figs, I love figs. They come to the fig tree. They have no fruit. They have no sweetness in their lives, as they have no healing and no joy in their lives. They have no sweetness. And they see the sweetness in our lives. And they say, will you come? Will you come? And the fig tree says, no, no. Should I cease my sweetness and my good fruit and go and sway over the trees? Is that interesting? Is that interesting? So they go to the next tree. And they say to the vine, will you come and reign over us? Will you come and be our king? They have no joy, no cheer. And they see the cheer. And the Christian, they say, will you come and cheer us? Will you come and cheer our lives? And the vine tree says, should I cease my new wine, which cheers both God and men, and go sway over trees? Well, what do you make of these trees? What do you make of them? I couldn't understand them. I said, well, why wouldn't the olive tree go and share its fruit? What was going on? Why did it think it would cease giving oil? What was wrong with the fig tree? Why would it not go and share its fruit? Why did it think it would cease getting fruit itself? What was wrong with the vine? Why would it not go and cheer the trees? The problem came to me. They wanted the trees, but not the God. They wanted the trees, but not the God. And these trees, they knew that their fruit was from their God. And their God had to go with them. about Gideon, really, in a way. They went to Gideon, and he had already blessed them in many ways, and they said, come and be king over us. And Gideon says to them, who am I that I should rule over you? Or my son that he should rule over you? This is chapter 8, verse 23. The Lord should rule over you. Your fruit should come from the one who gives fruit. You shouldn't be taking from me. You should be going to the source. You should be going to the source. See, people will come to us, and they'll come to us as Christians, and they'll say, come and get involved in this, and come and do that, because they know that we'll bring something to them to help them and to aid them. So the government wants to encourage churches, and it wants to, well, up until now, but things are changing a little, but it wants to encourage churches to get involved as long as we do what they want us to do. And they'll say, come and bring your peace, and come and bring your patience, and come and bring your joy. We need it. We can't deal with this kind of situation. You come. You help us. But they don't want our God. They don't want our God. And so we've got to say, no, no. When I come, I bring my God. And if you really want joy, it's not me you want. It's Him. And if you really want peace, don't come looking at me. Look at Him. And if you really want to have your heart soothed, don't be looking at me. Look at Him. But do we do it? So often they come and they say, will you get involved in this? And what happens? It's that pride, isn't it? We go, I'm special. They want me. And we go in. And we get involved. And we get caught up. And we get tied up. And we forget. We forget what these trees knew. Over the course of history, many Christians have fallen because of the promise of money and of honor. And they've given up their spiritual fire and their life to please men. And I'm sure you know them and you know of them. And I'm sure you may well have been one of them. Or maybe you are one of them. Godly ministers who've been rendered useless because of the promise of ecclesiastical honor. You know, there's been a minister and he's been influential. And they've said, well, come. And then because they've gone to another place of higher honor and pressure's been put on them, they've lost their way. It's Satan's work. And men and women who've lost their fruit for the sake of career and of prosperity. And so they've said to us, you'll be good in this job. Come, come. Come, come and bring your fruit, your joy and your peace. And come and bring it to this situation. And we'll honour you, and we'll pay you, and we think it's us, and we've lost our way, and we've lost our fruit, and we've lost our witness. And godly teenagers who've fallen because of the flattering attention of the opposite sex. I seem to meet a lot of these at the moment. Sad. And someone has turned their head and they've been flattered. And it's the attraction, the divine attraction that's been the attraction. But then it's been lost. We should be like the trees. I will come. But I've got to bring God. And if you really want what I have, Don't look at me. Look at Him. Look at Him alone. Look at Jesus Christ, who alone brings the balm that soothes the troubled breast. Look at Jesus Christ, who alone can cheer a heart. Look at Jesus Christ, who alone is the answer to life. Look at Him alone. And when people come to us with flattering invitations, we need to go to God first and say, "Is this your will?" And we need to say to the people, "It's not me you want, it's God." They ended up with a bramble, a man of the world. Yeah, they ended up with an Abimelech. Look at how the world is acting. And the tree said to the bramble, "You come and reign over us. You're like us. You're strong. You'll protect us." And he said to them, "Come and take shade. Take shelter in my shade." Well, what kind of shade? What kind of covering? You wouldn't want to live under a bramble bush now, would you? Well, that's what they had, wasn't it? That's what Jotham was pointing out. He was pointing out to them that what they had decided on was a hard, brittle, vile man. What they were lifting up, the kind of man that they were crowning, was a vile, brittle, hard man. A man whose only thought is for his own glory. The bramble said, "You come, you hide under my shade. And if you don't, let fire come out of the bramble and devour you and the cedars of Lebanon." Who'd you look to? Who'd you look to for your shade? Who'd you look to for your strength? And be careful. Be careful when the flattering voices come and say, "I want you. I want you." Make sure they want you and your God. Lord, as we consider your word again, we see many truths portrayed. We see the heart of natural man, scheming and proud and cold and hard. We see the joy that you give to your people, fruitful and bountiful. We see the way the world desires it, but not the living God. And we learn many lessons. We learn from the trees who refuse the flattering advances. We learn from those like Gideon, who will not set himself up above God, and who would rather point the people to the living God than take any pleasure from praise and honor and glory. Help us ever to point to our God, and ever to refuse any offer that comes our way that does not put Him first and His glory first. We ask that you'll forgive us for those days when we agreed and when we went into the world in our own power without our God. For those days when we fell, forgive us, Lord. And come again with that gracious fruit that comes by your Spirit, and help us ever to point to our Saviour. Amen.